Okay, good evening, everyone. My name is Dean Winter. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all to this ordinary meeting of Kingborough Council. It is Monday the 13th of July 2020, and it's 5:30 p.m, so I officially declare this meeting open and welcome everyone in attendance. Those of you who've been following online will have watched us do this from home, but we're very pleased tonight to be able to come back to the council chamber, at least as elected members and our staff, in a different format. One, we've changed the layout of the meeting so that we are keeping our distance, and unfortunately it also means that we're unable to have members of the public in the chamber with us, but as we've been doing, we've been live streaming on Facebook, and our numbers, the number of people watching our meetings and engaging with us, has been much more than it would normally be. Normally we'd expect on a cold winter's night probably only a few people in the gallery, and we've been getting some good numbers on Facebook. So thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate you joining us tonight. The audio recording of this meeting, I'd just like the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
And he's confirmed that. And to let everyone know, the recording will be made available on our website, and of course those watching the live stream on Facebook can do so, and also watch the replay later tonight if once was just not enough. Acknowledgement of the traditional owners of the land. I'd like to begin our meeting tonight by paying our council's respect to the traditional and original custodians of this land, the Muwinina people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, culture and Indigenous rights. The attendees this evening is myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. From our staff this evening we have our General Manager Gary Arnold, our Deputy General Manager is Tony Ferrier, our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services, Daniel Smee, our Manager of Development Services is Tasha Tyler Moore, our Communications and Engagement Advisor is Sarah Wilcox, and our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. And we don't have any apologies, we have all councillors with us this evening. The next item is the confirmation of minutes, and the confirmation of minutes confirms two items. One is the minutes of the special council meeting number 11, and also the minutes of the open session of council of our last council meeting. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Westwood. So I'll just read that motion, and it's that A, the minutes of the special meeting of meeting number 11 held on the 15th of June 2020 be confirmed as a true record, and B, the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 12 held on the 22nd of June 2020 be confirmed as a true record. As I said, that was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, the motion is carried. The workshops held since our last council meeting on the 6th of July, last Monday night, we held a workshop to discuss the Transform Kingston project. Declarations of interest is the next item. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest to declare? Councillor Westwood.
I'd like to declare an interest in the notice of motion on pokey machines, and I will be leaving the room.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Bastone, remembering how to use the thing after a while. We might have to. Do you mind, Councillor Street, just sharing for a second? Well, no doubt.
Thank you. I'd like to declare an interest in I'm just trying to find the application here. 33 Calder Street. 31 Calder Street, is it? No.
Goulet
31 Goulet Street.
Goulet Street,
yes. Yep. And I'll be leaving the room.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Bastone. Were you able to find a better worker, more operable microphone for Councillor Bastone? Thank you. Next item is the transfer of agenda items. Does any councillor wish to transfer an agenda item this evening? There are none, So we now move to questions without notice from the public. Without a public gallery here, makes it really difficult to take questions without notice. But it's always a good time to remind members of the public, a great thing to do if you've got a question that you'd like considered on a council agenda is to submit it to the general manager in writing. You can do that by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au, clearly directing it as a question on notice for a council agenda, and it will be answered in our next council meeting agenda, and the next council meeting is on the 27th of July. Questions on notice from the public. At the time this agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. Now move to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice this evening? Councillor Cordover.
Thank you very much, Mayor. My first question is in relation to the Delegated Authority Report for 10 June to 30 June on page 230 of my agenda. Is now an appropriate time to ask questions about those?
That's the, on the appendix.
Thank you.
Yep.
Sure. So my two questions are, there are two retrospective development applications in this agenda. One is in Kingston Beach, Auburn Road, and the other in Allens Rivulet, Crofton Drive. Can you please explain why they're retrospective and provide some detail about each of those cases?
Ms. Tyler Moore, are you able to provide that, or would you like to take it on notice?
Through you, Mayor, if I could just have a little bit of time, or I can take it on notice.
Do you have any other questions?
I do, thank you, Mayor. My second question is that members of the community have been raising Council's use of broad-spectrum herbicide glyphosate in Council weeding operations. Hobart City Council has embarked on trials of non-chemical interventions for weed control, such as steam treatment, and there are alternative weed control methods available, such as heat foam, available on the market. My questions are, is Kingborough planning on running an alternative weed control trial program?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Cordova, we have previously trialled alternative treatment methods, including steam treatment, but to the best of my knowledge, we have not trialled any alternative methods in the last 12 months.
Thank you. And a second question on that is, has Kingborough gained additional learnings from other municipalities, such as Hobart City Council, with alternative method trials? And
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'll take that question on notice.
Thank you. My final question on this point, Mayor, is will Council be considering a phase-out of the use of glyphosate or minimising the use of it, like in Byron Shire Council?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Again, Councillor Cordova, I will take that question on notice. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all.
Ms. Tollemore, did you want some more time? There's probably more questions if you'd like some. More time? Yep, great. Councillor Street.
Mayor, my question is to the General Manager. General Manager, this afternoon we were advised that the applicants in relation to agenda item 17.1 were requesting that the report be withdrawn and that that would occur. General Manager, what power do the applicants have to actually request that that occur?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Street, I'm not necessarily sure, without doing some research, that the use of the term power is actually enshrined in legislation, but what I can say to answer your question is that Council's practice has been that when an applicant seeks an item to be withdrawn in writing, we have accepted and approved that request.
General Manager, would that usually be in relation to development applications, though? The distinction being that this is a matter where a hearing has been held, and while I understand that it has been deferred previously, I'm now questioning the reasoning of the first deferral as well.
General Manager.
Through Mr. Mayor. Councillor Street, I can't, off the top of my head, comment on the First Amendment hearing and any deferral, but what I can say is that the Council practice has not necessarily deliberated, or differentiated, I should say, is probably more appropriate, between a planning matter, a sealed plan matter, or a council report in the general section of the council agenda for that matter.
Am I correct in saying, therefore, that the matter has been withdrawn from the agenda?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Councillor Street, and my understanding is that Council's Manager of Development Services has advised the applicant in writing this afternoon.
General Manager, are you able to make inquiry of the Local Government Division as to whether that process is usual, please?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'm happy to do that, Councillor Street.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Mayor, as you'd be aware, you wrote to the Minister for Housing, Roger Yench, a couple of weeks ago in relation to the proposed Huntingfield development, and in response to his offer to come and brief the Council, and quite correctly your response said that we would be happy to do that, however we would do it in a community forum to be held at the community hub here at Kingborough, and that Council would take responsibility for making sure that it could be held in a safe manner given the circumstances still of COVID-19. I understand we haven't had a response from the Minister to date. I'm wondering if the Mayor would like to comment on that, because I'm sure that residents of Huntingfield would be interested to know any updates.
Thanks for your question, Councillor Reid. You're right. The Minister Roger Yench has made representations to Council requesting a meeting with elected members about the Huntingfield proposal before his department lodges a development application for the site. But what precedes that is that in October last year, the Minister committed to me in writing that he would hold a public forum during the consultation process. Now, we all understood the reason why he couldn't hold a public forum during March and April, May this year because of the COVID-19 outbreak. But now that restrictions have been lifted, I'm advised that we could fit a number in the hundreds into our community hub, and we would obviously make that facility available to the Minister. It means that we could hold a public forum, it means that we could live stream it, and the Minister would get the chance to get that feeling that a lot of us got at the last public meeting. At this stage we haven't heard back the Minister's response, but it would be my expectation that he would take up the offer given he has made the offer in writing not so long ago. Ms. Tyler Moore, the answer to the question earlier from Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor, just looking at the delegate reports associated with that, the Auburn Road one was a garage that had approval, and then they took it upon themselves to fit it out with a kitchen and rooms and converted that use, so they were required to make a retrospective application for that. And the other one, the 703, related to use of a garage, which been, it appears from about 2013, and there's no reason in the report as how it came to our attention, whether it was a self-dob-in or a dob-in or a otherwise, or whether it was just an outstanding building permit that then had to be rectified as planning. There's not that detail in there.
Thank you. Can I ask a question on that, please, Matt?
Yeah.
Can you please remind us what disincentives exist, what mechanisms for enforcement exist to prevent or mitigate the risk of that happening in future, particularly with the change of use to visitor accommodation?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, it depends on the nature of the offence. We have the ability to do enforcement under LUPA, which can include enforcement orders, can go as far as proceedings in the Magistrates Court, and does include an infringement. It appears these two didn't get infringements. The penalty when they do their application is obviously a double fee, which is in our fees and schedules as well. And in some instances, we may do an infringement penalty, which will be 50 penalty units, as well as the double fees.
Thank you very much. And just for the minutes, my second question was about weed control, if that can be reflected. It just says delegated authority report, but there was another question on notice about weed control.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question actually in relation to the question in the agenda I asked last council meeting regarding the pedestrian access to the Twin Ovals from Spring Farm. I note that it states the internal pedestrian pathways are yet to be constructed and are proposed as part of the implementation of the endorsed future directions plan for the Kingborough Sports Precinct. Just to add on that, as we sit around and talk about congestion busting and active transport options and encouraging our greater community to get out of our cars and walk and cycle and get about the place, I'm wondering, do we have any plans for a timeline regarding the construction of these pedestrian pathways? And just a further question on that, I'm actually interested to know in relation to pedestrian access from Spring Farm and Whitewater to actually the track that connects to Kingston. I'm interested also to know where that will be placed.
Mr. Smee, you might need a microphone.
Through you, Mayor, the construction of pedestrian paths within the Sports Centre precinct, there is no time frame for that. It's part of our desired future plan for the area, but to be honest, we haven't got design plans done as yet. There are a number of existing informal paths that exist, some of which do connect to Spring Farm, but in terms of formalising them, we don't have a current time frame. And sorry, what was the second part of the question? In terms of Whitewater Creek, we received a notification today, actually, that the two parcels of land we are seeking to obtain from the state government are close to being transferred. That will then enable the completion of the link through from Spring Farm, and we are continuing our negotiations with the Spring Farm developer with respect to the development of the walking trail that Council would recall was approved to be funded through the public open space contribution. So all of those processes are still bubbling away, but they are ongoing and underway.
Councillor Reid.
I've just got a question in relation to the Kingston Park implementation report. On page... I've just gone past it. Bear with me while I find it again.
199, I think.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find the specific page I was asking about. Right. Sorry, I'll just... on page 208 of the report, just above figure 7, the highlighted text there talks about the rectification works that are going to be occurring at the community hub in the next few months. It refers to some large concrete slabs being replaced. I was wondering if we could have some information in relation to which areas that involves and why they're being replaced.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, they are the large concrete slabs in the main town square area of the community hub, and they're being replaced because there's some large cracks in the concrete. They weren't installed correctly. It's something that we've been negotiating with the builder for the last 12 months to go back in there to replace them. It's all been done at their cost. It's their fault. It's taken us longer than we would have liked maybe to get them back on site to do that work, but it will all be done, I've said here in the report, to late August, but it's looking like early September now. But the cracks were widening, they're getting worse, they weren't repairable in themselves, so the concrete had to come up. It just wasn't laid correctly, and so there was no alternative but to do this, and in fact it's been a reasonably good time in the sense that it hasn't been open to the public during this period, so it's worked out reasonably well from that perspective.
Thank you. In addition to that, I don't see listed in the implementation report any ongoing advice about the works that needed to be undertaken to provide appropriately full accessible conditions to the hub. And you may recall there was a list of items that had been identified by the Access Committee, and quite a number of those have not been acted upon as yet. The committee is meeting again in the next couple of weeks, and I'm sure would be interested in an update on that. But there were some significant issues, safety issues for people with limited eyesight in particular, that I'm very keen to see resolved.
Through the chair, we can take that on notice, and the project manager will follow that up and have some information ready for the access committee.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, and council.
There are no other lights on, in which case we will move on to questions on notice from councillors. First question on notice is on Watson's Road, Kettering, from Councillor Bastone, with an officer's response on page 2. The trees. Next question is trees being felled at Margate, from Councillor Bastone, with a response there as well on page 3, as well as question 3, which is outstanding building permits, from Councillor Grace. Question 4 is pedestrian access to the Twin Ovals at Spring Farm, from Councillor Midgley. Question 5 is dog ownership in Kingborough, from Councillor Westwood. Question 6 is stormwater investigations, from Councillor Westwood. Question 7 is low flow diversions, from Councillor Westwood. And question 8 is Huntingfield housing development update, from Councillor Midgley. With that, the open session is adjourned, and the Planning Authority will now commence at 5:51 p.m. Remind all councillors that we will now be acting as a planning authority. The first item on the agenda is DA 2019-603, development application for visitor accommodation, caretakers' residence and outbuilding amenities at 14 Mulcaze Road, Apollo Bay. Recommendations on page 26. Look for a mover and a seconder of that. Councillor Fox moves, seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. Just looking at this development application, there were 13 objections by the surrounding residents. There are concerns about the size of the building envelope being inadequate for this amount of occupation, that it's designed for a single dwelling only. The scale and the intensification and density will result in impacts to residential amenity, including increase in noise, changes to the surrounding character and primarily residential use of the area and the environmental value of the lot. It's also not clear whether the extent of clearing proposed is the minimum necessary for the works and associated bushfire protection measures, given that there's a large area of built infrastructure to be constructed within the hazard management area. The environmental living zone is primarily to provide for residential use or development in areas where existing natural and landscape values are to be retained, and it is considered that the proposal, while providing for limited tourism, will impact on the natural values and residential amenity of the area. So with all those concerns raised by our professional staff, I feel comfortable to move the motion. Thank you.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I was a little bit disappointed when I saw that this had been refused, because I thought six tents in the middle of an area where there aren't a lot of homes on large sized allotments was a good tourism venture, and that it was in keeping with the local landscape. I think tents instead of built structures do have a low impact on the environment, and in this time where we are struggling with tourism, it's good to see some investment and some confidence on Bruny Island. There's a couple of issues in relation to the performance criteria. So visitor accommodation must accommodate guests in existing habitable buildings. I don't see why we can't have visitor accommodation in other structures like tents, something a little bit outside the square. I guess obviously the planning scheme doesn't seem to account for tents, but I think we probably need to get a little bit more creative, because we do have issues. I understand at the moment it's quite difficult to find accommodation on Bruny Island, and we're not even having any interstate or international tourists at the moment. I don't consider that tents are overbearing structures. Generally, it says up to 14 people may on occasion be using the facilities. If you had a single residential dwelling there, you could potentially have a lot more people out on decks making noise, having, congregating. And the setbacks from the boundaries are a lot more than would normally occur in a residential area like Once Bay or Taruna or something like that. So I don't agree with the recommendation. And I note that the proponent has taken some measures as best as they possibly can to maintain the desirable characteristics of the surrounding landscape and protect the amenity of adjoining lots. Both buildings will have external finishes in the colour monument. It's considered that the colour will contribute to improving the visual amenity of the site from adjoining lots. And I think a fair effort has been made to meet the performance criteria.
Councillor Grace.
Thank you, Mayor. I fully support the Deputy Mayor and I won't support this recommendation. I refer councillors back that I remember down in that area some time with a young couple of kids just starting off in life, and they had to go through all this procedure because the residents didn't want them there. They tried to find every loophole they could find to stop them from building on their own block. This is a block of land that's been vacant for a long time now. It has two road frontages virtually. The impact and noise, I believe, would be insignificant to anyone else within that area. I think it's a good development, accommodation area for people. It's a beautiful little spot in there, no doubt about it. So I, at this stage, will not be supporting the recommendation.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Whilst the idea isn't a bad one, we're constrained by the planning scheme, and it appears that this particular development will cause an unreasonable loss of residential amenity having regards to the privacy of adjoining properties, likely increase in noise to adjoining properties, the scale of the use and its compatibility with the surrounding character and uses within the area, and retaining the primary residential function for the area. The various provisions which were non-compliant include the building height. The maximum height above the natural ground level of the caretaker's residence would be 7.7 metres, shown on the northern elevation, and the proposed amenities outbuilding would be 3 metres from natural ground level. In terms of setbacks, there are some issues there as well. A2, the setback from side and rear boundary is no less than 30 metres. It's not compliant. The proposed southern boundary setback would be 41.8 metres. The eastern boundary setback would be 24 metres and the western setback 20 metres, and then there's also some non-compliance with the environmental values as well. I think it pains us to also recognise the significant amount of community interest in this particular proposal, with some serious issues being raised there as well. And so I guess on that basis, and recognising our position to try and encourage economic development within the municipality that is in line with the planning scheme. That's why I will be following the recommendation of the planning officers in this case and supporting the motion. Thanks.
I'm not sure who had their line first, unless someone could help me. Councillor Street, thank you.
I wasn't sure. Just a couple of questions first, if I might. Does staff have any idea the distance between, rather than the lot boundary, what the distance between the nearest habitable dwelling and the proposed development is?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, I don't have that detail on hand. I can we can do an estimate from our aerial photography, but it's not provided in the plans.
So if I look really hard, I could probably do the same thing.
The scheme talks about boundaries.
Yeah, rather than... the only reason that I ask the question is just in terms of the impact upon residential... amenity. Thank you, Councillor Bastain. The other question is, in terms of the performance criteria for visitor accommodation, particularly P1B, any likely increase in noise to adjoining properties, should we take that to mean any increase at all, or is that any increase that would cause an unreasonable loss of residential amenity?
Ms. Tollemore.
Sorry, through you, Mayor. The Councillor could just mention which clause specifically. This was introduced in, as part of the State Government Planning Directive No. 6, which brought in for visitor accommodation specifically. And unfortunately, this doesn't have very quantitative guidelines. So we would take it as a likely increase in noise to adjoining properties. So it's from as the condition is today, not on an assumption that it would be developed in any particular way, noting the zone is environmental living.
Mayor, I make no criticism of the report as it's provided to Council, because I do think that this is one of those situations where there is a subjective decision to be made about the applicability of the performance criteria, and I think that it's a matter on which reasonable minds might differ. And so I don't make any criticism of the report or the advice in that sense. What I do say is that, to my mind, the proposed application, I would struggle to have found a more sympathetic application in terms of the environmental values of the site since I started on council, certainly. And I don't agree that the performance criteria aren't met by the application on the information that's been provided to us. I don't accept that there is going to be an unreasonable impact on residential amenity for the surrounding lot areas. I think, indeed, using that estimate, given the plans that we've been provided, it certainly seems like any current dwelling is a fair distance from the proposed development, and even so, still a distance from the lot boundary that provides sufficient area for that residential amenity to be maintained in any future development. The fact of the structures on the property proposed for visitor accommodation being tents is a double-edged sword, there's no doubt about that. But at the same time, you consider the minimal environmental impact that those structures would have, which no doubt is certainly why the applicant has done that, in recognising that it is an environmental living zone, and the impact needs to be minimised. As I say, it certainly seems to be a very sympathetic development application in that sense. And it's heartening to see that they have taken account of the movement of environmental matter around the site, as well as the reuse of any cut soil on the site as well, and certainly kept that cut to a minimum. Just going through some of the other performance criteria, I think I've adequately stated why I don't see that the environmental living zone setback performance criteria can't be met or aren't met by this application. With respect to clause 14.4.3 design, again, I respectfully disagree with the view of staff on that matter.
I think to say it's not clear how that the scale of the development is going to be compatible with the site is not enough. I think if we can't actually say why it's not going to be, then we're left in a position where we look at the information that we've got in front of us. And there being no desired future character statements provided for the area, we look at the surrounding land, certainly not highly developed, and I would contest that the development, the subject of the application, isn't an intensive form of development in and of itself either. Again, I think I've done environmental values to death, and we get down to stormwater management, stormwater drainage and disposal, and the advice from council engineers is that that's been satisfied as well. Building and works under the biodiversity code can be supported too. I recognise that there are significant public representations in relation to the matter. I don't downplay those representations at all, but ultimately we're here to look at whether the application fits within the planning scheme, and I think that it does, and that is the only thing that I can take into account when I make my decision. I'll be voting against the motion as it stands, and I foreshadow that if it is lost, I will move a motion to approve the application.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I was following along with Councillor Street and agreeing with everything he said until he got about three-quarters of the way through his contribution, because I agree wholeheartedly with the comments that he made about the fact that this is an application that has been done with great regard to the sensitive nature of the environment, and they've tried to mitigate the impacts of the accommodation on the land in question. But I don't think that you can go past the fact that if you go to page 27 and look through the zone provisions and the checklist associated with that, yes, this development complies with 13 of those zone provisions, but it does not comply with 7 of them. It's not that it's just not meeting it on 1 or 2 that we could try and make something work. It's half again that it does not comply with. And whether we like this or not, whether we want to have more tourism development in our municipality, of course we all, everyone who sits around this table wants to see that. I'd love to see something like this, which is obviously going to have a niche tourism market and appeal to a broad range of people. But as when we sit as a planning authority, we cannot have an opinion as to whether we like it or not. It either complies with the provisions of the scheme or it doesn't. And to me, the checklist here shows very clearly that there are significant issues in relation to a range of things. When I couple that with the concerns from neighbouring residents, I think one of the difficulties is that this is, they are tents, and I understand why they're tents, but the tents don't offer any, a piece of canvas does not offer any reduction in noise. So whether you're inside the tent or sitting outside the tent, there is still going to be noise when people are gathering, and can you imagine if a whole group was to book out all the tents, the noise that would flow potentially to neighbours, I think, would be unacceptable. So we do have to take those concerns into consideration as well. So I support the recommendation as printed here, and I do hope that there is some way that we can see this worked on in the future so that it will comply, that there is something that could perhaps change with it. I'm not sure, maybe it's not the location for it, but I certainly know I'd like to see something like this, but I feel like as a member of the planning authority that we're sitting in, I have a duty to vote in accordance with that, and the professional recommendation is for refusal, and I'll be supporting that refusal.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, councillors, for sharing, and also particularly Councillor Reit, who highlighted the points that actually didn't meet the planning authority guidelines. I also agree with the concept. It's unique and it is very a sensitive design. I also note that, and I hope I'm justified in saying this, that we have a regular, perhaps not a a matter that comes to us as the planning authority, but I do note that it actually does come to the list in regards to planning applications for visitor accommodation on Bruny Island. I think almost every agenda there for a while, there was a couple of them. I guess they were mostly Airbnbs and things like that, but we definitely aren't at a minimum for visitor developments that are happening on Bruny Island. I understand that, you know, these concepts come to council officers and are worked through. I'm wondering at all if I could understand some of the history regarding this and if there is any way that perhaps in the future they could provide a similar concept in regards to the sort of tent glamping style accommodation. Perhaps there could be lesser of them or a different style. I'm just wondering at all if the developer had thought about any other concepts for this application.
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, offhand I don't have the details and file notes of discussions that were had with this particular application, but yes, we often do have discussions with applicants about opportunities that they may have to fulfil what they want to do. So this is an example. It might be to find a different site or a different zoning that may have fewer limitations. And it also, the question you said was about fewer or more tents. It's not necessarily a number, it's the development as a whole and the Shipping Container development as well that forms part of that decision making. So there's a whole lot of factors that we have to consider and that we can offer to applicants, but it's not our real role to seek the right property for them. We can only provide advice. So, as mentioned in the conclusion of the report, some form of development on the site might be fine, but this particular proposal is not suitable.
I've got a question on that. So, thanks, Mayor. It does say in the conclusion, just on that point that was raised, the building envelope size is adequate for a single dwelling or single visitor accommodation unit. However, the size of the building envelope is restrictive for other development and use. And my question is, considering that appears in the conclusion, was the proponent provided with that, advice or recommendation that they could, if they wanted to, still run visitor accommodation on that site? It is appropriate for it, but just not what they had in mind.
Ms. Hollimore.
Through you, Mayor, in speaking to the officer that dealt with the application, they did have conversations about where it was headed and what the concerns of council were, and it was raised within the further information requests as well. So there were discussions, but obviously people could choose to continue with their application, and of course, if they, whichever way the decision goes, there's appeal rights for both parties.
Dean.
Councillor Grace with a question.
Yes, the question is, and I have raised this several times before, why does this application then be dealt with? When it's assessed by staff, they're the ones that assess it, and it doesn't meet the criteria, why bother going ahead with it? Why doesn't it go straight back until it does meet the criteria, or pretty close to? Because I've had developers say to me that, I'm getting out of the question, yeah. So that's my question.
Tom Moore, did you want to comment on that?
Through you, Mayor, I'm not too sure what go back is, but we have a statutory time frame. We can only ask for further information at certain points and we can have discussions with them, but we can't continue to not make a decision on it.
But if it doesn't meet the criteria laid down by our planning laws, why do we bother doing it? Why don't we just say it doesn't comply, go away? You're saving everybody's money and time.
Councillor Grace, so I guess that's what the report says. The planners have said that in their opinion the development does not comply with the scheme. But we have not provided the staff with the delegation to refuse under delegation unless it's out of time. And so anything that's recommended for refuse has to come back to council. Anything wrong there?
Correct.
Cool. Councillor Street, with a question, I'm sure.
Yeah, with a question, Mayor. Just in relation to the assessment checklist, because Councillor Reet has raised it, and I thank staff for the assessment checklist because it is a great initiative. But in relation to the checklist,
Is it not correct to say that it only addresses non-compliance with acceptable solutions? It doesn't appear to then go on to address the performance criteria, which are matters on which reasonable minds might often differ.
Ms. Tolnell.
Through you, Mayor, the checklist is just that it doesn't meet the acceptable solution, and the discussion is in the report. It's too lengthy to put it in the table, so the ones that don't meet the acceptable solution and rely on performance criteria are discussed in the body of the report, and also for ease of reading are listed on the front page where it says discretions.
Yep, I can completely agree that they're too lengthy to go in there, but I just wanted to be clear that, yes, it might not comply with seven acceptable solutions, but is it not then right to say, well, it doesn't comply with seven acceptable solutions, but that's why you need to go back and consider the officer's assessment of the performance criteria?
Ms. Tolmore.
Through you, Mayor, that's correct. So we might say it doesn't meet the acceptable solutions, but out of some of those, we may say that, yes, it met the performance criteria, and in this instance, some we said, yes, it did, like the stormwater, and others we say it still didn't get across the line of the performance criteria.
Excellent.
Look, for my contribution, I agree with a lot of what, all of what Councillor Street said in particular. To me, it is the beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and our planning scheme is not black and white. When I read this proposal, I read an application from someone who cared about the site, who wanted to create a visitor experience which was consistent with the planning scheme, that cared about the environment and that had a low impact on its neighbours. Now, the site in question has a very low density. In fact, there is almost no, very few habitable dwellings nearby. And so I was surprised that there were 13 representations. But again, then again, there are probably that many dwellings. And if I lived or had a shack in one of those dwellings, I probably would prefer not to have this development near me as well. But that doesn't mean to say we should refuse it on the basis of those people preferring not to have a development on the site. It's privately owned land, and if it meets the scheme, then they should be allowed to develop it. Does it meet the scheme is a subjective question. Because of the performance criteria, just because it doesn't meet the acceptable solutions doesn't mean it doesn't meet the scheme. Yes, it doesn't comply with some of the acceptable solutions, but this is a performance-based planning scheme, and if it doesn't meet the acceptable solution, it's able to be assessed against performance criteria. When I read the performance criteria, I have to say I came up with the complete opposite point of view to what the author of the report did. I didn't believe that the report says that the proposed variation cannot be supported pursuant to the performance criteria of the zone when it comes to visitor accommodation, when it comes to the environmental living zone, and for all those reasons listed, that we should refuse it. But I go back to the original point. I can't think of a more sympathetic application for a site than this one. This is a very low impact development application, and I struggle to think. I mean, someone who spent an enormous amount of money coming and put a lot of thought and effort into this, being refused on the basis of some of this reasoning, I think, is an unreasonable application of the planning scheme. And I wonder what the tribunal, how they would view it. Of course, we don't know unless they appeal. But my read of it was that this does meet the scheme, and I hope that councillors will consider refusing this and having a look at an alternative motion. To sum up, Councillor Fox.
Thank you, everyone, for your contributions. I guess I support the staff's position, and I feel from the discussions tonight that it's important that we do. If the proponent decides that they want to appeal our decision tonight and we support the staff, then the proponent will be going to the tribunal and arguing the case at their expense. I would hate to see the 13 local residents living around this development having to take up the objection and take it to the tribunal, and having to fight against a council that's going against their own staff recommendation. I understand that there is some sympathy for saying that the performance criteria are subjective, but for us as councillors to use that subjectivity as a way of overriding our staff's professional subjectivity is not the right way to go. I would prefer that matter to be taken to the tribunal if this matter gets that far, but I would prefer that position to be remaining, that we are supporting our staff in this situation rather than showing a sympathy for the developer, regardless of how much money they've spent. It's not about money. You can't just buy your way into developments. They have to comply with the planning assessment. They have to apply with our scheme. And I think the criteria that obviously are not compliant are important and override the subjectivity. So I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Fox. So the motion is that the development application for visitor accommodation, including caretaker's residence, sanitary pod, 6 bell tents and associated infrastructure at 14 Mulcaze Road, Apollo Bay, be refused on the following grounds. There are four grounds listed. It was moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Cordova. I haven't done this vote for a while. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. It's Councillor Reet, Councillor Fox, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Mitchell, and those against is Councillor Grace, Street, Vastone, Westwood, Wass and Winter. The motion is lost. We now go to the foreshadowed motion from Councillor Street.
Mayor, I move the alternate motion that I understand
Ms. Morton
has possession of.
Different one. Okay, for those at home watching on the live stream, I don't believe you can see this, so I'm just going to talk you through while we find it. Because that motion is lost, and that was the refusal motion, there's also been a motion drafted which would approve with a number of conditions. Now, I'm not going to be able to read out to you every one of those conditions tonight, but it will be available in the minutes of the council meeting. They'll be usually on the website about Wednesday, is that right, this morning? And so I apologise that we can't show it to you now. Councillor Street would like to move this motion. Does anyone would like to second it? Councillor Grace. Have you actually seen the motion, Councillor Street?
I'm just wanting to make sure that it is as I... If you can just scroll through it as well.
Again, yeah, just...
You're right, you can keep going.
The background of those at home. So... an approval motion requires a bunch of conditions to be added to the motion, and so we've asked for a motion to be prepared so that it's correctly conditioned, so that the proponent will need to abide by a number of conditions.
There is one section that I want to amend for the motion to be moved. Mayor, if we can go back up sorry, Ms. Morton, keep going. Stop. Three, if we can remove all words after council, full stop. And I'm happy to move the motion then as shown on the screen.
And Councillor Grace, you still want to move the motion? Just for transparency, there was an additional piece of a condition where the screening had to be maintained to the satisfaction of council, and Councillor Street's removed. Has asked that to be removed before he moved it. Councillor Street, would you like to move to the motion, or have you said enough?
So moved.
Anyone like to speak to the motion?
Could I ask that the matter that we have a break so we can actually print this out and all councillors can see it before just reading it on the screen that
I
keeps
think that's
moving?
Reasonable.
And can I also ask that the condition that was removed, I'd actually like to see what that was. If the council staff wrote that with that condition included.
We'll print out with that included and then you can see.
Point of order, Mayor. Could I just point out that I didn't realise I was giving away my speaking rights just then. I thought I was moving the motion.
I understood. Well, we can get, look, if we take a break so that we can print out some copies of this and read it. Ms Wilcox, are we going to go on a break on the live stream? Okay, no, we're going to do that. Just turn your microphones off. Yep.
On a procedural matter, is it possible to move at this juncture to defer this motion until next council meeting so that we're not doing it on the fly like this?
Because I've read got, so we've got a motion that's been moved by Councillor Street at this stage, so we are bound to, and seconded by Councillor Grace, so we are bound to do it, but there's been a question if we can just adjourn the meeting to allow some time for councillors to read it more thoroughly and then come back and debate it. Would someone like to... Do we need to move that we adjourn? No, we don't. We'll just adjourn it. Okay, so I'm going to adjourn the meeting now for 8 minutes, which will take us through until 6:35pm on the ground clock up there. We'll be back shortly, Facebook viewers.
So the time, 8 minutes, has now expired. And what's, where we're up to in the debate is that Councillor Street has moved a motion and to approve this development, which for those that may just be tuning in on Facebook, is the one at Bruny Island. I don't have the number in front of me. And it's been seconded by Councillor Grace. Councillors have had a motion to approve, distributed. As I said earlier, the minutes will be available online for those who can't see it on Wednesday. Councillor Street, would you like to speak to your motion?
Thank you, Mayor. Much of what I have to say on this motion I have said in relation to the previous motion, except I will say this. I thank staff for the alternative motion that has been written, and I think that the conditions imposed serve to ensure that what was already a very sympathetic development does comply with the performance criteria in the scheme, and will be the sympathetic development that I think the application proposes. So thank you very much, and I commend the motion to Council.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. As I said in my initial discussion before, you know, I think it's a great idea. I've read we've had the better part of a week and 39 pages of a report to consider and consider thoroughly, and that's our role. I've now received this motion that's sitting in front of me at 6:27 p.m. and now I'm speaking to it at 6:34 p.m. I don't think that's fair, and I genuinely apologise for the fact that I'm going to vote against this motion. I think it's reasonable that we have a little bit more time than 8 minutes to do the exact opposite of what the recommendations were from our own planning staff. I just don't see how I'm able to consider this properly. And maybe that's, you know, a fault of my own, that I can't consume and really, you know, consider the nuance of the recommendation that's here before us in the space of 8 minutes. And I actually, it beggars belief that the other councillors around this table can, and my hats are off to them, that they can go in the exact opposite direction within the space of 8 minutes and consider a four-page motion in that break. That really is a feat of strength. So I will be voting against this, but I actually apologise for it. Thanks.
Councillor Reid.
I just wanted to question, normally we have in conditions a condition that says that this does not also provide approval for signage and that it needs to be the subject of something else. I can't see... I'm a bit like Councillor Cordova. This is a lot of stuff to try and digest in 8 minutes or 10 minutes, and it's a little bit disappointing that we weren't given this earlier by the person who... the councillor who's moved it. Ms Tyler-Moore just confirm whether there is any reference within here to signage?
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor. No, there's no condition in there. It would ordinarily be an advice clause. It wasn't included. Staff were also having to rush to do the conditions as requested today.
Are you able to suggest some appropriate words that we could add to this so that it's covered by that?
Through you, Mayor, we can just add the advice clause because it's not a statutory condition.
Oh, okay.
So we're happy to add that on when we generate it.
Yep, thank you.
Well, at this point, I just want to clarify for those that so you understand what happened in terms of the drafting of the alternate resolution. It was only today that, having spoken to two of my colleagues, I got the impression that there may be some unease with the recommended motion, and so it was only today that I requested an alternative motion be prepared, and that actually puts a lot of pressure on staff to prepare one and have one ready for the start of the meeting. And as I understand, the motion was completed at what time, General Manager?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Literally 5:27 p.m. today.
Right. So, Councillor Street, I don't think he's at fault. One of the things when you're asking for an alternative resolution is you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And previously, I've been criticised by councillors for asking for an alternative recommendation when there was no support for the alternative. And it took staff, I was told, almost a day to prepare it. And so you either ask for one and potentially waste a lot of time, or you get a general feel to whether there's going to be a lack of support for the motion. So it's a tough one to manage. But I don't think Councillor Street's at fault for not having presented it. I do understand that 8 minutes isn't very long, but the agenda item you have had for a number of days, yes, the conditions you've had for 8 minutes, and I understand that's not very long, but this is the reality for not just Kingborough Council, but every council that would consider an alternative. I don't know of a better process. If you've got one, happy to consider it for another meeting. Further speakers? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I also am dissecting this, as we all are, in the 8-10 minutes. Just a question in regards to parking. I can't seem to find anything, but I'm wondering if you normally have some more information in regards to parking. Have I missed something? Where is it? Sorry. Parked vehicles C. Oh, yes. Okay, and again, that's in requirements that we have for these type of developments. Mayor, I'm just wondering.
Ms. Tolman.
We normally have more information.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, it's a standard condition.
Thank you. In regards to the points in regards to fires... I'm wondering, there's a point there in regards to the light, and I guess that relates to natural light. I mean, who doesn't like looking at the ambience of a fire pit? But due to the submissions that were received and the application we initially looked at, I'm just wondering at all, is there anything at all that states in regards to when fires, I think it was 11 p.m. to 6 a.m, external lighting must be turned off? Do we at all have to put a clause in regards to fires to be out overnight?
Ms. Tolemore.
Through you, Mayor. I think they're not related. The external lighting, that's specified in the planning scheme. They talk about external lighting. There's no reference to fire in the planning scheme. I would have thought that any idea about control of fire on site as a risk measure is separate to the lighting, but I may be misunderstanding the question, and it could potentially go into condition 6 as the operational management plan, but not a great nexus with the planning scheme, because it just doesn't happen to talk about fire.
Okay, yeah, I guess there are risks associated with leaving a fire on overnight, but there's also the light. I guess it's that we're talking about, we read the submissions and we saw in regards to the noise and the effects that does have when you have development proposal. And I guess if you're having just those little things that might keep you awake at night, the flickering of the light, the artificial light, I can understand that, but also that could be the light of the fire as well. So I don't know, anyway, if it's not part of the planning scheme, I guess we can't put it there, but it is also very much a safety matter. Number 8, when it talks about the emission of noise, the smell and the fumes, again, that was raised in regards to the noise. Sorry, does this relate to the actual accommodation noise when we talk about the emission of noise? Because that was definitely raised a lot in the representations.
Ms. Tolemore.
Through you, Mayor, this condition's a pretty good catch-all for things. You'd be surprised what we get complaints about. If there's a nuisance associated with this use, because the use is not a no permit required use on this site, it gives us the ability to enforce it. So we can't always predict what it's going to be. So, for example, and you may laugh, but they may have a drumming teaching session there or something, and that could cause a nuisance. It gives that ability. So the smell and the fumes, the same could go with the smoke that's emanating from the site. There are EMCA controls as well, but they have to be a very significant nuisance under those controls. and aren't necessarily related to a planning scheme use because it doesn't capture that, but this is a use that requires the discretion of council to approve it, so we need to have the ability to control nuisances that come with that. Again, it's not overly quantitative, it'll be to the discretion of council, but of course we deal with it in a reasonable manner, and again, like I said, we get complaints about all sorts of things, and some of them are unreasonable and some of them are reasonable, and occasionally it was just a matter of raising with the operators that there is a nuisance being caused, and it often can be addressed, but it just gives us that ability to enforce should we need to.
Thank you.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to ask a question to Mrs. Tyler Moore. In 11 of the new proposal, external building materials, unpainted metal surfaces will not be approved. So I presume that implies to things like water tanks.
Ms. Tolmer.
Through you, Mayor, it's about buildings. The planning scheme only talks about buildings. It doesn't talk about water tanks. While I appreciate the concern about reflectivity of water tanks, it's not something that we can really control and is probably not a reasonable and fair thing when people have particular thoughts about whether plastic is appropriate to be used in water tanks.
But they do, there is colour bond water tanks as well, isn't there?
Yep. I don't know, but
And my next question is on water tanks as well. As you know, I'm interested in water tanks. There appears to only be one on site. Is there a fire water tank that has to be there as well as a water tank for people's use?
Ms. Tolman.
Through you, Mayor. The something that might be a bit of a shortcoming of the scheme is the need for doing fire, bushfire prone areas related to visitor accommodation. It doesn't apply. So historically we used to have control about bushfire prone areas in planning, and then that got changed. So we can only do it if it's for a subdivision or if it's for a vulnerable use. And vulnerable use is defined in the scheme, such as hospital, prison, I don't call it prison, aged care place, but it excludes visitor accommodation. That's state government decisions, so therefore we can't ask for those requirements, and that has to do with it under building. But the trick with this one is that they're not really buildings because they're not structures, because they're tents, even though that they're going to be there permanently all the time. So it'll be possibly dealt with under the building permit.
Right.
Possibly not. It would certainly be in their interest, and I definitely understand the concerns about water consumption on the island, but we, at this point we don't have capacity to deal with it, but it's certainly something that we would have interest in exploring, how we can resolve the water consumption issues on the island.
Right, because this one also has a hot tub attached to it, which I presume is for the use of all guests.
Through you, Mayor, I believe it is, but I'd have to double check the report if that's
okay.
The case.
All right.
The report says yes.
Yeah.
Councillor Grace and Councillor Stree, if you just don't mind. Are there any further? There's no further. Very clever, Councillor Grace. Councillor Stree, would you like to sum up?
Yes, Mayor. And look, I think to sum up, I simply need to say this. I do apologise for the length of time that councillors have had to consider the motion and the conditions thereon. However, as the Mayor has pointed out, I'm in the same position as you all. So in that sense, I also don't feel the need to apologise, but I do regardless. I don't come into these meetings and fiddle with recommended motions and officers' advice because it's something that I enjoy doing. I don't enjoy causing frustration. I don't enjoy frustrating staff. I don't enjoy frustrating my council colleagues. But having spent the week looking at the application and the provisions of the scheme and the advice, I formed the view that the application did fit within the planning scheme. Now, the option that I have and the responsibility that I have, having formed that view, is to vote against the motion. Now, or vote against the recommended motion. Had we not had the alternative motion and needing to make a decision tonight, the alternative would be that I simply move a motion to approve the development and it flies through with no conditions. This, in my view, is far preferable. I understand the frustration. As I say, it's not. I don't take any delight in it whatsoever. Never have done, never will do. But this is a far better alternative than simply approving the DA without conditions. So I thank my council colleagues for their forbearance. I apologise to staff, but hopefully we're going to come out the other end of this with a decision that is appropriate.
Thanks. The motion was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Grace, and is that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for visitor accommodation, six tents, caretaker's residence and outbuilding amenities at 14 Mulcase Road, Apollo Bay, for Mr H. George be approved subject to the following conditions. There are 17 conditions. They will be printed in our minutes of this meeting, which will be available on our website on late Wednesday. All those in favour of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Aye. I have a division. All those in favour, please say. Please raise your hand. Councillor Grace, Councillor Street, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Wass and Councillor Winter. And those against is Councillor Reet, Councillor Fox, Councillor Cordova and Councillor Mitchley. The motion is carried 6-4. We move on to the next item. It is 13.2 on page, starts on page 47, and it's... Councillor Bastone has early declared an interest in this matter, so she's leaving the room. It's DAS 2019-9, application for subdivision of one lot and balance at 31 Goulet Street, Blackmans Bay, for PDA surveyors. The recommended motion is much lower, and it's on page 58. Looking for a mover and a seconder of the motion. Moved by Councillor Fox. Thanks, Councillor Cordova. Appreciate it. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I feel very confused and concerned about this motion because, once again, it's a recommendation from staff, and we have received an email from the developer as late as 5 o'clock this afternoon, telling us that the staff report is inappropriate, inadequate and wrong, and inviting all councillors to a site visit, which I think is inappropriate without being guided by staff. My computer doesn't work, so I can't read the actual letter that I received from the developer, or from the surveyor representing the developer. I am concerned that, again, a member of the council has had the time to prepare an alternative motion. It's taking the wind out of my sail in recommending what to me seems a perfectly logical and reasonable situation where we should be refusing an application for a subdivision which would leave a balance which is inappropriately small, a balanced lot, and that this purportedly does not comply with the planning scheme, and I would like to be supported by staff to confirm that this is still a valid recommendation from staff.
So your question is...
Is this motion before us still a valid and current recommendation from staff, or are we going to be presented with an alternative motion?
Well, it is a valid... It is a valid recommendation, and if a councillor foreshadows it under the meeting procedures regulations, an alternative motion may be later presented, but none have been at the moment.
My question is, has an alternative motion been prepared?
I'll let the General Manager.
Through you, Mr Mayor. Yes, Councillor Fox, I can confirm that a request was made to have an alternate motion prepared.
Well, I feel, and I know that I'm probably speaking out of turn, but I feel that if an alternative motion is being prepared by staff, it would be really courteous to let councillors know that this is going to happen before we're... I feel like I get ambushed after the debate, after a genuine debate has occurred, and then get ambushed by members of the council who don't agree with the staff's recommendation. But I feel very disillusioned and very disheartened by this process. Should I continue arguing for this recommendation or not?
Councillor Fox, I'm not sure where to start. We've been running this I've been on council for nearly 6 years. You've been on for a lot longer. The process hasn't changed in my time. I've been requesting, as you know, I've often differed from the advice of planners, and I've been requesting alternative motions throughout that time. It's never been raised until this evening that councillors wish to see it earlier. Most of the time it doesn't arrive until just before the meeting because it does take a long time to prepare the conditions. The reason why I have in the past asked for alternative resolutions, both for myself and on behalf of other councillors as I have today, is so that we don't get stuck in situations where we don't have anything prepared. You must be... Every councillor has to come to a meeting with an open mind, and having an open mind means that you are not just going to tick and flick a recommended motion. If there is a reasonable chance that you don't agree with the motion and you'd like to change it, well, you should be prepared. Being prepared for a meeting means being prepared to have a motion put through council that isn't the recommendation. Our job is to scrutinise the reports, not to just read them. The alternative has been experienced here at council. We've had situations where an alternative resolution hasn't been prepared and we had 20 minutes. I remember Councillor Berry sitting out in the council's room for 20 minutes feverishly preparing an alternative resolution because he hadn't prepared one or asked for one earlier. So the alternative is you can have large breaks in the meeting where council staff are having to help draft alternatives, or you can do it earlier. But there's no perfect situation. If you've got a better way to do it, then I'd urge you to constructively put forward the way to do it. If you'd like us to provide it as soon as the alternative resolution is drafted, certainly happy to do that, but I'll tell you that I don't think you'd find it be much earlier than the start of the meeting. That's the way, unfortunately, it's working at the moment.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I do appreciate that it is very difficult to do these things on the run and on the fly. And I do appreciate the effort that the staff have made. But I do think it would be appreciated by the councillors to know that there, one, that there is one being prepared, and two, to have it at the very beginning of the meeting. So we do have a chance to think about that and even read it if we have a few moments between items. So that's really where I'm coming from. I think we have got a better process, but I think it's important that we are all aware. I think there was a number one rule as a councillor that I've always abided by, and that is ask that we don't get surprises. And to me, this is the worst type of surprise because it's in the middle of the decision-making process. We do not want surprises. It would be, I can accept that motions are lost or that they are passed, but I also think it's important that if there is a process happening that some councillors are aware of and others are not, that all councillors should equally be aware of that process happening before or during the meeting. Thank you. In terms of having moved this motion, I would like to say that the conclusion on page 58 reads that the proposal seeks approval for the subdivision of an existing internal lot at number 31 Gourlay Street, Batemans Bay, to create one lot, or lot one, and a balance lot containing an existing dwelling. The proposal fails to satisfy the requirements of the objective of for the general residential zone, Blackmans Bay, and clause 10.6.1 lot design of the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015. It is therefore recommended that the proposed subdivision be refused. The reason why it is recommended for refusal is that the proposal fails to demonstrate compliance of the planning scheme in that due to the design and location of the new lot, it would not be reasonably capable of accommodating residential use and development consistent with the purpose statement of the general residential zone and the local area objectives for Blackmans Bay and the development standards of the general residential zone. Particulars, the size and shape of Lot 1 will likely result in unreasonable impacts on the amenity and privacy of future residents of a dwelling on Lot 1 and residents of existing dwellings on the balance lot and adjoining properties due to reduced setbacks to boundaries and minimum separation between buildings. The proposal fails to demonstrate compliance with Clause 10.6.1 of the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme in that the proposal fails to meet the acceptable standards in Codes E60 parking and access. The proposal does not provide for passing bays along the access to create a safe environment for users by minimising the potential for conflicts involving vehicles, pedestrians and cyclists in accordance with the requirements of Clause E673. The proposal fails to demonstrate compliance with Clause 10.6.1 of the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 in that due to the design, location and orientation of the new lot, the building area of Lot 1 cannot achieve the required orientation to achieve maximum solar access for any future dwelling on the lot. The proposal fails to demonstrate compliance with Clause 10.6.1 of the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 in that due to the design, size and location of the new lot, the amenity of neighbouring land is likely to be unreasonably affected by subsequent development and use. The size and lot of Lot 1 will likely result in unreasonable impacts on the amenity and privacy of future residents of a dwelling on Lot 1 and residents of existing dwellings on balance lot and adjoining properties due to reduced setbacks to boundaries and minimal separation between buildings. The proposal fails to demonstrate compliance with Clause 10.6.1 of the
Fox.
Scheme in that the proposal fails to include passing bays
Fox.
To service the future use of Lot 1.
Thank you. Councillor Gross.
Mayor, I won't support this motion and I'm very sad to sit here again. And I believe the study we had into, or whatever you call it, investigation we had into our planning by our consultant, again, deliberates to me, Mayor, that we're not taking any notice of the recommendations that were made by that consultant to this council. Because if
Councillor
so...
Councillor Gray, can I just remind you, hang on... We're in the planning authority meeting and you need to be relevant to this application.
Well, so the application, Mayor, the applicant was not even notified prior to this meeting, according to the information we have, that this was a refusal.
There's no requirement to inform an applicant of what the recommended motion is. I'm sure there's a requirement to let them know what the decision is, but as far as I know, there's no requirement to.
It goes back to what I said earlier in the night, I guess, Mayor. If these things are not going to meet the criteria, why do they come? They should be sent back until they do meet the requirements. And that's by our professional staff sitting down, assessing the application right from the beginning.
Again, on this case...
Well, all right, I won't argue with you, okay. Mayor, but I'm just saying I'm not going to support this. Whether councillors are not prepared to look at the information that was given to us today, that is up to individual councillors. I certainly do, and I appreciate that information that's put in front of me.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't support this recommendation as we have in front of us either. I think it is... something that needs to be reviewed, the character statement for Blackmans Bay. We've had that tested recently. I think Blackmans Bay, in terms of increasing the supply of housing is a good area to do that in, for in by way of infill development. There is infrastructure in Blackmans Bay, there's public transport, there's shops, and if we are going to stop the urban sprawl in Kingborough, we need, the only other alternative is infill development. So I note that as part of this report, the objectives for the general residential zone in Blackmans Bay is not met. I would argue that we need to review the objectives of the general residential zone, the character statement for Blackmans Bay. And I'll just read that out. Blackmans Bay should continue as a predominantly low-density residential area.
Council, just make sure you're being relevant to the development application, not to broader planning policy in your contribution.
So that's my first point. The second point is there are a couple of things in here which I don't think are necessarily correct. There are two shared driveways, 6 metres wide. So I guess I do note that the shape of the proposed subdivision and the balanced lot, it is unusual, but the shape of it I don't really think is a reason for refusal, given it has been proven that a two-bedroom dwelling with a carport, size 165 metres squared, covering only or less than 30% of that lot, can be built on the lot one. Also, in terms of so the passing bays, it says in here the proposal does not provide for passing bays along the access to create a safe environment for users. There are two driveways with reciprocal rights, so I think that addresses that issue. The second issue is, sorry, just bear with me. The proposal fails to demonstrate compliance with clause 10.6.1, as Councillor Fox read out in detail. The applicant has provided advice, which wasn't included in this report, to say that the proposal does not include the removal of the existing dwelling and as such creates a site constraint to creating a compliant subdivision. Councillor is correct, the demolition of the existing dwelling would free up the space to increase the flexibility of the site. However, it is considered a significantly more sustainable outcome to reuse the existing dwelling on one of the lots while also creating a new lot for additional infill residential development. The issue of overlooking, overshadowing and visual impact, both over a possible future dwelling on Lot 1 and by a future dwelling on Lot 1 over other properties, has been addressed in the plans and report by G. Hills & Partners Architects, which we also have a copy of. Third point, the issue of... Did you say time? No. The issue of overlooking, overshadowing and visual impact, both over a possible future dwelling on Lot 1 and by a future dwelling on Lot 1 over other properties, has been also addressed in the plans and the report by G. Hills & Partners Architects, which we also have a copy of. So, on that note, I will apologise in advance very sincerely to my colleagues, because I do have an alternate motion, which I foreshadow that if lost, I will put forth for your consideration, at which point in time I suggest we should have another break. It's not as long as the first one, but as the Mayor outlined, it was either disagree with the recommendation and put forth something that I hadn't received council staff advice on, or ask today when I was in the office for most of the day for something else to be done. So I do apologise for that and for putting you on the spot, and I do note the comments, and certainly if there is a better way, I will certainly embrace that next time.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I'm a bit hesitant to talk on this motion because I feel as though I've been accused of something by virtue of my conduct in the previous motion, which I absolutely disagree with, and that is that somehow in making an assessment of a planning report that is in the opposite direction to the officer's advice, that I'm somehow ambushing my council colleagues, Councillor Fox. I think that's a really unfair thing to say. I think the reality is that we all need to assess each and every DA that comes before us as a planning authority on its merits and consider the advice that's been granted. And if Councillor Fox, in her 30-plus years on council, has only looked at the officer's advice and not considered the development application itself and whether it fits within the planning scheme, then I'm incredibly disappointed that that's the case. To consider that...
Point of order.
Another...
On the point of order.
I'd say that's offensive to a councillor or to another individual.
Councillor Street.
I withdraw. No more offensive, though, Mayor, than taking the position that councillors that vote against staff advice are somehow ambushing their council colleagues. I could likely make the same accusation. Mayor, I do agree with the reasoning of Councillor Westwood, and I won't be supporting the motion as it stands. As I say, we need to make an assessment of each and every application that comes before us as a planning authority and make a decision about whether it fits within the planning scheme. I've taken the view that this one does. Is it a development that I would do myself? No, it is not. I don't think it's a particularly pretty subdivision, but that's also not something that we are considering as a planning authority. I do think that it fits within the planning scheme, and I make no apologies on that basis for voting against the motion.
There are no further lights on, so we're getting close.
Sorry, I just had a question, Mayor.
Councillor Cordova.
So looking at this recommendation, my question is, do the planning officers still, at this point, agree that the size and shape of Lot 1 will likely result in unreasonable impacts on the amenity and privacy of future residents? And if they do still agree that this will likely result in unreasonable impacts on the amenity and privacy of future residents, what's to be done about that?
You've read the staff's point of view.
Sorry, Mayor, I'm just asking if they still agree with...
Why would the member of staff...
Because we've been told already that there's a foreshadowed motion that the staff have worked on.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Cordova, one of the requirements of the Local Government Act that I have to adhere to is that I have to sign one of the front pages of every agenda to say that the advice that is provided is prepared advice from a professional with the skills and experience to put that report and that recommendation into the agenda. There is nothing that has changed the recommendation put in the report from the officer.
Councillor Reid. Oh, Councillor Mitchell, I didn't see it.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't have that much to say. I do support this motion, this recommendation as printed. I do not always agree with the recommendations. Majority of the time I have, and I do trust their expertise in relation to this fulfilling and meeting the requirements of the planning scheme. They know that in far more detail than myself, and there is a number of the recommendation as printed states quite clearly the areas that it does not comply with those matters. We do see a lot of infill development happening in the area of Blacklands Bay. I sometimes cringe that we actually approved some of those developments, but we do because they have met the planning scheme requirements. And this one does not. And as Councillor Fox read out the clear reasons why it doesn't, I think that we should be listening to the staff's advice and supporting this recommendation as printed. And if the developer put this in knowing that it would not meet the requirements, but there can still be the push through to see if councillors perhaps vote against it, and then they might perhaps get what they're hoping to do. But there is requirements; they are in place. We can analyse and assess, but I think in this instance, it's fair and square as the reasons why it does not meet, and perhaps there could have been some other alternatives that they could have considered. So I support this recommendation as printed.
Question, Mayor, about the developer. Would it be known that it didn't meet the criteria? I think that's a statement that should be questioned.
The background to this one, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Hollamore, the background to this one is actually made it to a council agenda in the past with a recommendation for it to be refused, and then the request was made to withdraw it. That was last year. Since then, there have been conversations between the applicant and council, and I'm sure the applicant was seeking a recommendation to approve from council planning officers. When it's arrived to the agenda, it still has a recommendation to be refused, but there has been those discussions. Thanks. Councillor Reet.
Thank you. I'm just curious in relation to the comment that you just made about that this had previously been withdrawn, and I do recall that last year. And I'm just wondering what aspects, if any, of the application have changed since that original submission.
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, the changes were only very minor, and some additional comments were made by the applicant. I was just having a look in the report because I believe that we did make some comments about it. So looking at the report, it says that it was had an assessment of the single dwelling layout against the provisions of the scheme, and from memory there was some minor changes to that layout of that dwelling, but nothing enough to address the concerns. They still had the same constraints of the site, and the dimensions of the proposed lot remain the same.
So essentially, I guess the question is, it shouldn't have come as any surprise then, given the limited nature of the changes in between version 1 and 2, that it was another refusal.
Through you, Mayor, the conversation was had with the applicant that the refusal was going to come up despite the correspondence today, and definitely discussions during the meeting, and even I attended one of the earlier meetings about the constraints of the site and the issues with it. So, yes, they were aware of the likely outcome.
Thank you. I tend to agree with the comments that Councillor Midgley made earlier in relation to sometimes we do know that there are developers who just push the boundaries a little bit, or not the literal boundaries, but the figurative boundaries, in an attempt to see whether they can get something through that doesn't comply with the scheme when it comes before council. And I find that, I guess, a bit troubling. I also find it troubling that here we are once again we're assessing an officer's recommendation, and we've already had foreshadowed that there will be an alternative recommendation if this motion is lost, yet we're not privy to what that alternative recommendation is. So we're kind of like, it's a bit like the blind leading the blind. And I do think, given the comments that have been made around the table today, it would be very useful if we could come up with a better way of dealing with this, because I've no doubt that there are several pages, once again, of an alternative motion that we will be asked within 8 or 10 minutes to digest and then decide whether we want to approve it or not if this current motion does not go ahead. So I'm sure with a little bit of clear thinking that we can come up with a better way of doing this that enables us to make sure that we're considering all the information that we have available to us. Because like others, I find it difficult to make a judgment when I don't know what the other side of the coin is, if you like, as to what, what parameters are being placed around if we were to accept that this DA could go ahead. So all I can do for now, because I'm not privy to any alternative motion, is to vote on the recommendation that is before us, which is for refusal. So I will be doing that.
Look, for my contribution, well, all you're right being asked to do is vote on the recommendation in front of us, and that's all you can do. I can't recall ever seeing a foreshadowed motion, you know, certainly not printed in the agenda and not provided days in advance. And in this case, it's been provided during the meeting. Councillors are able to review it at the moment. But obviously the foreshadowed motion, as Councillor Westwood said, is to approve, which is the only alternative to not to refusing, is to approve the development, and the conditions will be what I'm sure councillors would scrutinise. But on Councillor Westwood's contribution, I think the point that she made was that there is already a large amount of infill development happening in Blackmans Bay, and there has been in spite of the character statement, and then so every time I see that used as a reason to refuse, I sort of shake my head, because anyone that's been in Blackmans Bay or lives there can see the amount of units that are there and infill that has and is taking place, and so we have the floor there. The perception when I speak to applicants is that councillors is that we scrutinise the report, and that's usually when we get to the situation where we have DAs that come to us with a recommendation of refusal. It's when, after a period of time, the applicant and our planning staff have a difference of opinion on whether an application meets the planning scheme, which, as outlined already tonight on a number of occasions, is perfectly normal. The planning scheme is not black and white. It's not right or wrong answer, and I don't think it's good governance to. And I'm not. And in fact, I won't even say. I know no one here just accepts the recommendation. We're all reading the reports, and we're all applying our own level of scrutiny to it. But if you apply your level of scrutiny to the report and you don't agree with the reasoning or with the outcome, the only thing you can do as an elected member is to vote against it and come up with an alternative, and that's what's happened a few times tonight. Look, on this matter, what troubled me, I suppose, was, again, that when I read through the performance criteria, I didn't agree with the reasoning that the development DAS did not meet the planning scheme. I thought it did meet the performance criteria, and that's why I'll support it. In one part of the report, it says that the applicant had evidenced that, in their opinion, they could build a dwelling on the site, on the proposed lot, but yet the recommendation was that the planner's position was still that it couldn't. On that and many other performance criteria, I differed from the report, and I believe that this does meet the planning scheme. For that reason, I will also not be supporting the recommended motion. To sum up, Councillor Fox.
I guess it's difficult, because I feel that some of Councillor Westwood's arguments are that she would like to, for example, review the character statements for Blackmans Bay. Well, they are the character statements, and they
Councillor
are what
Fox,
we have to deal with at the moment.
Sorry,
I'm summarising the debate.
When Councillor Westwood did say that, I also pulled her up and said, look, actually, that's not... We're actually talking about the DA, and could you stick to the DA? So, in summary, I'm also asking you, in the same way as did Councillor Westwood, if you could stick to not the planning policy, but the DA itself.
Yeah, but that is in the actual recommendation, that it does not comply with the character statement. And also, the main concerns about this subdivision are the fact that the the solar orientation, maximum solar orientation, cannot be achieved. Therefore, it will be a very small block, too close to the neighbours. The distance between the neighbours can't be achieved. The setbacks are minimal. There's hardly any separation between buildings, and the traffic of the cars coming and going is also something that is not able to achieve the planning scheme's parameters. So these are unarguable factual situations. What we're creating here is two very tiny blocks, and they will be cast in shadow. The houses will be very unpleasant to live on in. It's not the sort of thing that we should be promoting as a council. I'm not against development, I'm not against infill, but it's horses for courses. If it complies with the planning scheme and the blocks are getting smaller and smaller in the planning scheme, the setbacks are getting smaller and smaller, but this application does not comply. So it's factual, it's a statement, it's mathematically correct. So I feel we should stand by this recommendation and support the recommendation and refuse this application. Thank you.
Okay, so the motion was moved by Councillor Fox and was seconded by Councillor Cordova, and the motion is that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for subdivision of one lot and balance at 31 Goulet Street, Blackmans Bay, for PDA surveyors be refused for the following reasons. From memory, there are 17 reasons there in the agenda. No, 17? Five. Where are you 17 from? Apologies, five. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against?
No.
I'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Reet, Councillor Fox, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Midgley. Those against? It's Councillor Grace, Councillor Street, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Wass and Councillor Winter. The motion is lost. We now go to the foreshadowed motion. It is 7:30 and we haven't moved the resolution. Would people like to have a genuine break at this stage, say 10 minutes, and you can choose whether to read the agenda or read the motion in front of you or just have a coffee. Well, you might have already read it as I have during that. Would we like a break at this stage? Oh, sorry. I thought Councillor Westwood had distributed, and that's why he raised it. So we'll take a... How long would you like? I'm hearing 5, 10 and 15, so I'll go with 10. So the break will return at 7:35 p.m. Thank you.